play the music?
Need the latest news analysis on your green and gold? Well, we better call Paul.
I'm too busy multitasking here. It's part of my job as a producer. That's on me. That's not on you. That's on me. Sorry, Paul.
No, man, I had to hear the Better Call Saul music again because I never pass up an opportunity to talk about the show, even though it's never going to be on again for another 5 years.
I would like it on the record. I think that has become the Better Call Paul music, and it's Better Call Saul who's borrowing it.
I like that. Trademark. Paul Emig, joining us.
That was a lie. Yeah, okay, that was a lie.
I'll buy it for the time being. Hey, Paul, we're going to talk Packers, but I know you're a Bucks fan, too. Did you see the report from Shams today that J.R. Smith meeting with the Bucks?
I saw the report. I saw the airport picture from random Bucks fan, whoever that was.
Did you take that picture, Paul? Were you at the airport?
That was not me. I was not scouring General Mitchell today. I don't know. What's the consensus been amongst the two of you and among callers and Twitterers and whatever else? I'm not sure how to feel about the possibility of J.R. Smith.
I'm right there with you. He's a talented guy. Certainly the decision making has been questionable, to say the least, in the past. Forever we will remember that befuddled look after bringing the ball back out top after the missed free throw against Golden State and LeBron going, what are you doing? But I think Kyle Korver is the name that most Bucks fans have sort of honed in on and hope will be the next player to wear the green. So we'll see. I don't know. It's interesting. What will the price be? If I may.
Yeah. By the way, I think the price would be the veteran minimum, which can hopefully help us feel better about it, because if I understand it correctly from the smart people in Bucks world, like Frank Mann and Eric Name, that's all the Bucks have to offer is a veteran's minimum. So that, you know, so it wouldn't be a lot of money. It would just be one of the final two roster spots. But seeing as you open with a non-Packers topic, and I know we want to get into that, I just want to answer a question that, so when Joe sends out, like, on Twitter, you know, the show for the day, and he says, here's the guests and here's the topics, is Keston Hiro the real deal? May I answer that question quickly, Joe and Mark?
Please, the floor is yours.
If you haven't seen my tweets about it, Keston Hiro, I'm a big Fangraphs guy. I like to look at my Fangraphs stats. So Keston Hiro, through 137 plate appearances, is the best hitting second baseman in all of Major League Baseball. Number one in OPS, number one in WOBA, weighted on base average, number one in weighted runs created plus. You name the statistic, Keston Hiro is the best at it in all of Major League Baseball. It's crazy. I mean, the guy, is he the real deal? Yeah, because he's the best, you know what, he's the best second baseman in all of the majors. So I think if that's not the real deal, what is? But yeah, so I digress.
I'm just going to start making up acronyms and throwing them out there. You wouldn't believe what his ABW is or his YBX with how many of these stats we have today. And I'll say, I'm with you, and I know we got to get to the Packers, but I'm with you on that. I brought this up, it's just sort of a, I don't want to call it a cautionary tale, but look, Corbin Burns, I think, still has great potential, but he was fantastic last year, and no secret, he's regressed this year. So I think we approach that from the, all right, temper it a little bit, because the guy is fantastic right now. We'll see where things go as teams adjust to him and he's forced to adjust back. But ultimately, I think Keston Hiro, as he has proven at every level of baseball he has been at, the guy can hit, Paul. The guy
He just hits. I think if there's any skill in baseball that makes me feel comfortable with a guy not falling apart, it's the hit tool. I mean, you can be fast, and you can have a great arm, and you can be stronger. If you're a pitcher, you can have, like, all the spin rates in the world that Corbin Burns has, and all, you know, five-pitch arsenal. The one thing that is consistent, if you know, as prospects become stars in the majors, is the hit tool. The hit tool doesn't leave you, and that is clearly the Keston Hiro trademark. So I would venture to say, because his strikeout rate is fairly high, if anything, he's going to get better offensive numbers as his strikeouts get cut down. So I might I've been drinking the Hiro Kool-Aid since 2 years ago at the draft, but I'm an OG Hiro guy.
I like that. That's how I'm going to introduce you from now on. Paul Emig, our OG Hero guy, here to talk some Packers football, actually, as we get into that.
I'll update
my
Twitter bio accordingly, yeah.
I look forward to that. We were talking about this earlier on the show as well. Jimmy Graham and what the Packers need out of him this season in order to be the type of offense that they expect to be and certainly fans expect them to be. He's 32 now, Paul, so I don't know that anybody should expect the 25-year-old Jimmy Graham, but still a lot of tools in his bag, you would think. He's healthy as of right now. What are you expecting from him this season?
Not a ton.
Really? Okay.
It's been a long time. I think what Jimmy Graham did early in his career in New Orleans was he gained almost like an exorbitant amount of goodwill among NFL fans because he was just a monster when he was teamed up with Drew Brees. They got, a first-round pick for him in that trade with Seattle, plus that starting center with Unger, wasn't it? I mean, trying to go rack my brain from 5-6 years ago without referencing it. But, he was amazing. And you know, it's just, I just don't see that player anymore. I mean, there was a point when, you know, Bill and I would talk about this back in December, January, and it was like, I think it was a very, you know, easy conversation to have is like, hey, should the Packers bring back Jimmy Graham for whatever his cap hit number is this year, like $12 million, or are you better off just taking the dead money hit and bringing him and not bringing him back? And like, I think there's a case to be made that, you know, that you should have gone the latter route. Now, more important than what I think is obviously what Aaron Rodgers thinks, is what Matt LaFleur thinks, is what Brian Gutekunst thinks. And yes, this wasn't like a situation where cutting Jimmy Graham would have given you like full cap flexibility again. I mean, he had a huge dead cap number. So there was more than just his performance in terms of reasons that you'd bring him back if you're looking at the overall cap math equation of the whole thing. I'm just pessimistic, man. It's been too many seasons for me of watching a guy who, by the way, was never even an average blocking tight end. I mean, and that that's probably putting it fairly kindly. He's a one-dimensional guy in the fact that he can catch passes, but you know, if you know, he benefits from the fact that he's 6'7" and he's just a monster. Like in terms of middle of the field, he's so hard to cover. But especially after the season he had last year in Green Bay, after some of the seasons he had in Seattle, I think I need to see before I believe. So I'm a bit on the pessimism side on the Jimmy Graham stuff.
Well, that being said then, Paul, if they are going to, again, get to where people expect them to be, and we got into this on Tuesday, what's realistic for this offense in year one, but if they are going to get there, you start to look around the young guys, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown. You also, I think some people forget about Geronimo Allison just because he got hurt at the end of last season. Jake Kumerow is there. Jamon Moore, who was supposed to be extraordinarily talented but couldn't hang onto the football, so saw his opportunities dwindle. And then I'll even throw Jay Sternberger out there as, you know, one of your top draft picks at that position. Yeah. Who do you see stepping up and supplementing Davante Adams? Because Lord knows somebody else is going to have to occupy that number two and number three role for them to be able to get the job done on offense.
Yeah, and I think it's fairly wide open behind Davante Adams in terms of, you know, the hierarchy in Aaron Rodgers' head, probably in terms of the, you know, schematics in Matt LaFleur's offense, with tons to be figured out in training camp and preseason. But I think the, you know, sort of the week before training camp depth chart would probably say that it would be Geronimo number two, Valdez-Scantling number three, and then a pretty, you know, stacked battle for number four, five, six, and even seven if you want to add in Trevor Davis if he's able to, at some point in his career here, be more than just a return guy, which, you know, certainly is TBD. Kumerow and Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown. So, you know, I'm a Geronimo Allison guy. I definitely think that had he not gotten injured last year, and he wasn't just contributing on, you know, offense. He had that blocked punt in week two or one, I forget. I think it was week two that led to a touchdown. I mean, he was really coming on, and I think had he had a healthy season, I don't think it would have changed like the fortunes of Mike McCarthy or of the Packers offense or anything, but I think we'd have a much higher opinion going into the 2019 season of Geronimo Allison as a football player, as a contributing member of this team, both as a wide receiver and as a special teams guy. And that's where I think he is. I think he's the number two, but there's a reason that, you know, Allison, again, and as much time as GMs spend studying the draft and studying players, guys like Geronimo Allison slip through and go undrafted, right? There, I mean, it's a clearly every team in the league made a mistake seven times over because there's not a team in this league that Geronimo Allison would not be on the roster with. Now, might he not be the number two everywhere? Probably not, but he's clearly an NFL wide receiver. Having said that, the size and speed combinations that Valdes-Scantling, St. Brown, and Jamon Moore have, Brian Gutekunst has a type. He clearly wants tall, fast wide receivers and kind of hopes that they can figure the rest out, particularly with Jamon Moore and the drop issue. So, you know, the ceiling for those three guys that were drafted a year ago at wide receiver is higher than what it is for Geronimo Allison, and I think that's fair to say. But what you have in Allison is a consistent, steady guy who I really think was getting on the same page, a huge trust with Rodgers early in the season of 2018 before Allison got hurt and everything started to go downhill. So, I mean, I think you go into it saying Adams 1, obviously, Allison 2, Valdes-Scantling 3, and then 4 through 7 being bunched up. But I don't think that means that, you know, by even week 2, week 3, much less week 10, that order will be the same, because 2 through 7, including Allison in that, I mean, they're going to let them battle it out. And I think that's a very – when you have depth there like that, you kind of have 5, 6 guys grouped up, I think it brings out the best in all of them.
Yeah, offensively speaking, that's one of the more intriguing storylines for me. And to your points about Allison, yeah, a guy that has come a long way since coming out of Illinois and, frankly, pretty cool to see as you watch his career develop. Expecting – I know a lot of people are – big things from him. Winding down with Paul Emig right now, we hear so much about Matt LaFleur's offense. We talked a lot about defense on Tuesday, so I'm going to keep it here. The need to utilize the run game in LaFleur's scheme and open up the passing game, it's I guess, something that's worthy of discussion to think Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams could be prominent players in what they're attempting to do this year, but you know, Mike McCarthy always insisted that he wanted to be more balanced on that side of the ball, too. It didn't always materialize, as we know. How likely do you think it is that Green Bay's ground game is actually featured in more of a prominent role this season?
I think it's almost a certainty. One project I want to do before next week, and if, you know, one of you guys want to do it for me, let me know, is that I want to look at how many times over the past, I don't know, let's call it 5 years, that the running backs have touched the ball over the past 5 years cumulatively. So, you know, and not including, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield. Let's shoot a number in the dark, and let's say the Packers running backs at a whole averaged, what do you want, 25 touches a game as a whole, times 25 by 16, whatever the math is there. It's like 400 touches per season for the running backs. Whatever it is under LaFleur is going to surpass that number, and probably by a significant margin. It's part of the staple of the Shanahan offense that Matt LaFleur has adopted. It's clearly one of the, I think, probably bigger points of his hiring was him. You know, Matt LaFleur, what's your fundamental offensive scheme? What do you most believe in? And what Matt LaFleur, at least schematically, would seem to believe in if you study the history of that offense, is running backs getting the ball, not just you know, being handed it, but being tossed out of the backfield with, you know, little short routes. So I think, like, if you were to put like an over under on whatever the average was over the past 5 seasons of Packers running back touches, whatever that number was averaged over the last 5 years, it will be greater than that in the 2019 season. And if it's not, you know, schematically speaking, I think something would have gone wrong, because LaFleur, on paper, and again, he has to prove that he can stick to his guns when the product is actually happening on the field and there's all these variables, but whatever that would be, I think he's going to want to exceed the number of touches that running backs got under Mike McCarthy, because that's the staple of that offense.
He's Paul Emig, our Green and Gold analyst, and an OG Keston Hira backer. We'll add that to the title. Paul, always appreciate the conversation, man. Enjoy it. Would love to keep it going, but alas, we are out of time. We'll do it again down the road. Thanks so much, man. Talk soon.
Thanks, Marcus, and see you, Joe. See you guys.
Paul Emig joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider, hiring drivers right now. They work hard. You work hard. They treat you fair. For 80-plus years, they've been getting it done. Call them at 800-44-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com.